I'd like to transition now, if we could, to a more of a panel-type Q&A for the balance of our time. We've got a number of questions here, so try to get through as many of those as we can. Jody, I'm hoping you're still on. We have a few questions here, actually, for you, too. The first of which is, do you know how it will work that the overlap functions in conjunction with, say, the 120% buy-up coverage?
I would ask if Joe wants to explain that a little bit better. I don't know that I have a great explanation of that. We actually don't have those GRIP-type policies here in Oklahoma.
Essentially, all these questions are good questions, but they're more complicated than it's easy to talk over the phone. But the whole purpose of having the 120% portion to buy up is that what you're trying to do is allow producers to gain more coverage, a bigger payment. Now they pay for it, but I don't necessarily think, and we haven't had that much experience in Texas with this either, Jody, but I'm not sure why we would, you know, you could, what it amounts to is that the producers are going to be able to increase that payment without having to, the established payment would be, say, $20 an acre, but you could multiply that by 120 and they'd be paying for the right to get a little bit larger payment if one was triggered. Essentially, this only relates to SACs. Most people with regard to stacks are going to be either making the decision to buy stacks with the buy-up or stacks alone. And in that case, if it's stacks alone, there won't be any overlap at all because, you know, unlike SCO that has to have an underlying policy, stacks does not. So I don't know. I mean, the answer is it's complicated, but there might be some chance for overlap, but in my mind, the producer's paying for it.
Okay, fair enough. Jody, another question for you. This questioner asks, if the majority of the cotton in a county is irrigated, would stacks still apply in that case?
My interpretation of it is that would be irrigated and non-irrigated, but maybe Joe has a better answer to that, so that there would be stacks for irrigated versus non-irrigated.
Stacks does allow for breaking it out and having a different protection on irrigated cotton and or dryland cotton separately. That's a pretty big deal. Obviously, what you're going to find is the irrigated cotton, if you bought stacks on it, and I suggest you do that, is going to be cheaper than the dryland cotton policy, and it will trigger differently. Because basically on that policy, you're going to have a lot less yield risk, and you're going to have the same price risk, but a lot less yield risk, so it's going to be cheaper. But with regard to answer the question, clearly a producer is going to have the option to have irrigated stacks and dryland stacks.
Okay. That probably helps explain it a fair amount there as far as the differences. So thank you. This question, Joe, is really more directed to you, I believe, in your comments, and it's a difference between MPCI versus SCO. So the questioner asks, what would motivate an individual purchases, say, a 70% MPCI, to want to buy a supplemental policy, particularly where that would increase the cost of coverage even further without maybe realizing what additional coverage is actually being provided?
Yeah, this is where it gets a little bit tricky, because the supplemental coverage option is intended to allow producers to protect a portion of their deductible. So if you're in an area that deductibles is small, and I say 70 is kind of in the middle, then what you're saying is I'm willing to pay some money for the ability to not have to lose 30% of my revenue before I would have insurance to kick in. One of the things that Art would probably not, if he was on the line right now, we've had conversations since he's taped this, and his warnings about how high the cost of SCO coverage is going to be a lot less today than they would be when he recorded this. But the reality is why would someone be willing to do this? It's very simple. If you have the cost of in certain areas of the country because of weather problems, the cost of 70% coverage is very expensive. And with SEO, one of the things you can do is you can buy lower levels of coverage, individual coverage, and then protect a larger portion with the highly subsidized supplemental coverage option, therefore cheapening up your insurance and essentially getting the same coverage. Now, just as Art mentioned, if you're situated in such a county that your yields are not very highly correlated with the county average, then you do expose yourself to not getting a payment because the county didn't trigger when you did have a loss. But the other side is true as well. You can get a payment whenever you didn't have a loss, but the county did. So these are things to consider, but essentially, to cheapen up crop insurance is one reason why people would do this.
Okay, fair enough. That explains it probably about as good as we can at this point. Jody, another question come in here directed specifically to Stacks. If you wouldn't mind trying to take this one. Questioner states that they understand that the cotton base is only eligible for Stacks where the base was planted to another crop. So will cotton-based producers have a choice between SEO and Stacks?
It is my understanding that cotton producers with cotton base who also plant cotton have the option to choose between SEO or Stacks. They couldn't get Stacks and SEO on the same acreage, but they could choose between one or the other.
Now, I might SEO add just has quick,
go ahead.
Let me just add, one of the things that since cotton is now being protected only by crop insurance, the base acres has zero to do with this anymore. That, you know, whatever you plant of cotton, just like everything in the past, crop insurance is on all your planted acres, and that's why you need to think about cotton going forward. Stacks will be on planted acres of cotton.
Well, that explains that a fair amount. So thank you, Joe, for that. Another question, Joe, that probably is best handled by you, given your perspective on how things are kind of developing here. The questioner is asking, will we have access to some kind of a central location to find out what the county yields are, revenues might be for each county that will be used for the programs, whether it be SEO, ARC, Stacks, et cetera? Is there going to be some kind of a clearinghouse we'll be able to look that up at?
Well, actually, it's the answer should be yes, but I can't promise you that. What makes this all interesting is that for purposes of calculating payments, it's apparent that ARC is going to use more what we call a NAS county yield, and the crop insurance programs use an RMA county yield, and those don't have to be the same. And so the question of asking for where can I find this is really nice. One of the reasons why Stacks and SEO aren't available yet is because those area yields, RMA doesn't have them yet, and that's one of the things that they're working on to develop. So I would assume, this is, again, an assumption, that once they're developed, they will be available. Because to make these choices, you really need to know how much coverage you're going to get, which you need to know those yields. As soon as they're, you know, that's the point. I guess the point is that they should be available from the risk management agency fairly soon, probably within these products don't have to be sold till next year, so it probably isn't going to be soon, actually.
But likely will be available at the time where the rules have been released and folks are now considering what choices they have available, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, all right. Joe, one question here came in specifically related to your presentation. Is asking about the graphic that you used. It shows that yields can be updated using PLC. The question is, can the producer update yields and use ARC?
Well, this is one of those things that's going to be clearly up to USDA and the Secretary to make the decision. The Farm Bill clearly reads that producers who chose price loss coverage could choose to update their yields. But this person, much like a lot of people, are saying, well, I'd like to choose ARC, but I'd like to update my payment yield just because I might not have another opportunity before the next farm bill that might be used, the next programs may use payment yields, and I would not like to forego the option to do that, even though I'm not choosing PLC. As I said, this is going to be one of those where we're going to have to find out. USDA is going to have to make a decision on that.
All right. Well, thank you both very much for your questions and answers, your willingness to stick with us today. We had a number of questions came in, but in the interest of time, we'll move now to wrap up. We very much appreciate your thoughts and observations. But as we close, I want to remind everyone that today's program, is one in a series of topics that we're trying to cover the details of the Farm Bill. We have several others that are scheduled coming up. The next one on March 31st will cover the conservation title, issues related to horticulture and beginning farmer programs. On April 7th, we're looking at covering the nutrition title and food policy program changes. And then on the 14th, we're looking at covering fruits and perennial crops, vegetable-type production, small farms, some food safety issues, and a number of other topics there that are still somewhat in planning. We very much would like to hear from you that are in the audience. If you have thoughts or ideas about topics or presentations you would like to see us offer in the future, you certainly are welcome to enter those thoughts into the chat pod there at the left. Or if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that to the email address information@farmmanagement.org. As mentioned earlier, the recordings and other information are available from today's presentation at the website agandincertaintimes.farmmanagement.org. Our team has hosted something north of 100 individual presentations since we began our efforts back in 2009. And at the URL on the screen, we have posted presenter slide sets, presentation recordings in video and audio formats, as well as links to external resources mentioned by the various speakers. If you're interested in a copy of any today's presentation slides or other recordings, we invite you to visit the site at your convenience for more information. And finally, we have offered a number of different URLs and suggestions for things you may want to follow up with throughout the webinar today. So in order to provide you with a single reference for all that information, we've compiled a single PDF file that you may now download using the file share pod on the screen. And you can do that by clicking on the file name there and then the Save to My Computer button at the bottom to download the file to your own desktop. So let me close by again extending our thanks to all of today's speakers for their very first-class presentation on commodity programs and crop insurance. A thank you, too, to all of our sponsors for their help in putting on this webinar series. And thanks also to our Ag and Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for making this series possible. We'd also like to thank all of the participants in today's webinar. We certainly hope that you find today's content of value in your work. We hope to see you again in one of our upcoming programs. And until then, we offer you our sincerest wishes for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. Until then, and for Ag in Uncertain Times, I'm John Hewlett.